you think your plans were secret till you left your office last night and you closed the door behind you? Were you walking in your sleep or were you just too tired to notice all the watchful eyes upon you? There's the man who does the maintenance and the maid who cleans the carpets in the hall. And the guard down in the lobby through a hidden TV camera saw it all. The children need his habits and your random dancing patterns and I've been nice guy. And you're fully dissociated as you see me standing with things in your bones. Oh, you and I. This little birdie told me who was talking to a fly on the wall. So when you think nobody's looking on the eye that passes by you, when you think nobody's listening, I'm the listener. I'm the resistor.
And this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Esker. Tom Esker. This is Insurgent Radio Network, and this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Esker, here in the heartland, in the bunker, right here in north central Indiana, transmitting to the world. Yeah, boys and girls, you got me. I'm right here in a terrible bunker. Terrible Tommy in the terrible bunker in terrible north central Indiana at terrible P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Our big website is resist.com. And that's where you go to get a really, really good education. If you don't believe it, try it out. And tell everybody to get their subscriptions in for the radio show. Yeah, this is June. It's time to get them in and get some new people subscribing to the show. First of all, they're going to say, $20? Gee, I can get free over there, man. And it's darn front and those that I'm not going to mention his name. We can get it all free there, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But what's the quality of what you're getting? Ha, 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 ha. Believe me, there's something in these radio shows that's going to save your life, save your money, save your health. There's a whole lot of things these shows can save that other shows, I'm afraid, are not going to save. But that's all right. Most of those are right-wing, conservative-type shows with a little race added in and a whole lot of Jew, 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 Jew.
It's all the Jews. We never do anything wrong.
Our race is good, and that's it. Well, that's too bad, because our race has done some fucked up things, that's for sure. Mainly against itself, like I said yesterday. Today I'm going to play you a little clip about what I'm talking about. See, I believe in the art of contrary thinking. Originally put out by a company called Caxton Printers out in Caldwell, Idaho. Read it years ago. Embraced the idea of the art of contrary thinking. It's worked pretty well for me, up until now at least. And I recommend it. I think that book is still available out there someplace. I haven't checked lately. It wasn't a big, thick book either. It was only about maybe 100 pages. One of those books like Lysander Spooner's book on trial by jury and things like that. Some of the best books ever put out were thin books. I think anybody could write a thick book because they just keep writing and writing and writing and writing. David McCallum's Exiles from History is one of the best books on that subject I think it's ever been written. And it almost can't be called a book. It's more of a booklet. I think it's 100 pages, maybe 150 pages. And then Eustace Mullins and Biological Jew. These are all thin books. You can read them in a couple of hours, even a slow reader. So I find so many of the best books, the most educational books, the ones that gets the point across without all the BS, are thin books. Yeah. We've got a hell of a lot of them up there on our website in PDF form that you can download, so you got no excuse. I think,
I don't have any money to buy a book.
No, we're giving them to you. We're giving them to you, for goodness sakes. Well, I just renewed Mother Jones for Richard Scutari. He likes Mother Jones, and there's a lot of things in Mother Jones I agree with, too. And so we subscribed him last year, and coming around again, so that's where some of your money goes too. These subscriptions now and then, and purchasing a book for one of the POWs. Okay, I got to pick up some money orders today when I go to town and get them out. I've been settling on getting two or three $25 money orders at a time and spreading the wealth around, the big wealth. Yeah, right. But boy, I'll tell you, these guys really appreciate it. I keep getting these notes from Matt Hale's mother, Evelyn Hutchison, encouraging us to do this and encouraging us to do that. And I feel bad about it because almost everything she has urged us to do is not going to go anywhere if you understand the way the system works. Once they get a hold of you, they're going to hold on to you come hell or high water. So as far as Matt winning some kind of a surprise deal in court, as far as I'm concerned, is out of the question. I hate to be your Aryan pessimist, but once those feds get a hold of you, God damn it, they bond with you like super glue, man. They don't want to let go no matter what. Even when DNA absolutely proves a guy didn't do the crime, it still takes months, sometimes years, to get him out of the clink. The best answer is don't dance with the devil. The dancing with the devil is not too productive. And the devil's all around there that's worse than the devil. Are you kidding? The devil is a liberal compared to these human bastards. And they're all around. I had a guy call me yesterday. He's the head of a clavern of the Klan, and not too far from me either. He was talking about his group, and I said, well, I don't know how many you got in your group, but you could figure at least one or two of them are informants. You best get out of an organization. Put the Klan to bed. It did its thing in the day, but it's over now. And run silent, run independent, because I'm going to tell you that if you run with these guys long enough, they're going to get you. And then once they get you, they're not going to let you go. Number one, because all these guys in these Nazi and Klan groups, the minute they get arrested, they're making deals and pleading out and trying to save their ass. You know, they swear on the Bible, man, I'll be with you. I'll be loyal to the end of time. First 24 hours, those professionals get them into a interrogation room, and they're gone. They're done. And if you're hanging out with them, you're done too.
I believe that the people that sign up for these whore wars by the capitalist corporations and criminals, they have idealism in their heart that they're fighting for the American cause, the American people, but they're fighting a crooked war. They're a bunch of saps. They don't question. And that's not to mention the people that are being recruited where the Pentagon has recruiting offices in third world countries and in most countries around the world, that where they can have them. You know, not just Europe, but throughout the Middle East and, you know, the Caribbean, Africa, Asia. Those people, when they're offered a path to earn military duty, a path to assured path to citizenship, those are the people that we can also count on that will shoot us in the streets, especially the third worlders, the darkers. Darkies. All right, Tom. This is Pat from Detroit. God bless you as always. And just to clarify a little detail about what I said about the Saps, they're spurred on easily, unthinkingly, uncritically, by the same patriotic wartime hysteria, cheap-ass propaganda that stirred on the so-called greatest generation of saps that went and destroyed Western Europe and plundered it and had all the white girls raped by the niggers, and the same mentality. You know, it's their grandfathers, their fathers that fought, so it's tradition. We got to stick up for America no matter what. It's our country, right or wrong. And yeah, even when it's wrong, wars by the crooked capitalist corporations and the rich bastards' interests behind it all. Bunch of saps, and I ain't going to take that back. And it's too bad that way. People got to be more like you and me.
Well, there was our old buddy Pat from Detroit. He's right in the middle of the mess. A working class white guy living in Detroit. Anyhow, let's get on to this information I wanted you to hear that has to do with contrary thinking and what I said yesterday about almost all of these wars were unnecessary, if not all. There's only one reason, or mainly one reason, why countries continue to move towards war, and that usually has to do with money and power and egotism and arrogance, of which Washington, of course, and the military-industrial complex and the Cheneys and the Bushes and the Obamas know no bounds as far as arrogance and selfishness and the whole bit. And so we'll play a little bit of this synopsis of a book that is excellent about this subject and how these wars did not have to take place. One interesting piece in it is where Hitler held back his armies as they were about to go into the lowlands up there in Europe and failed to capture the entire British Army at Dunkirk. And why? You ask yourself, why wouldn't he want to capture the whole British Army at Dunkirk? until England either back off or you're not getting your men back. But he didn't. There's a lot of strange things about these wars, and especially World War II and World War I. So let's have a listen.
I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. Sun Tzu at Gettysburg. Ancient Military Wisdom in the Modern World. Bevan Alexander. I welcome the author and congratulate him, and we begin with Sun Tzu. Sun Tzu is possibly an historical figure, possibly not. But what we have is a list of thoughts or observations that Sun Tzu compiled or were compiled under his name sometime between the 8th and 5th century BCE in China. These are based on understandings of the proper conduct of warfare. It applies, of course, the metaphor of life, any contest. And the author, Bevan Alexander, has brilliantly, carefully, and transportingly applied Sun Tzu to famous, very famous, historical battle campaigns or wars through the last several hundred years, and Gettysburg is at the centerpiece of illustrating how neither side or both sides or one side inadvertently make a mistake that Sun Tzu could have advised them against, or get it right, as Sun Tzu would have recommended. We have no reason to believe that Sun Tzu was on the table of these generals or these commanders, but now looking back through history, it is easy to explain some of the errors. And Bevan, congratulations and good evening. I want, first of all, your thoughts on reading Sun Tzu and using this to battle campaigns through history. Were you surprised at how carefully it applies to the mistakes and the successes?
Well, no, I wasn't surprised because the Sun Tzu's basic premise is common sense. And common sense, doing things in a commonsensical way, is what generals should do when they conduct war. And unfortunately, that's not been the history of warfare over the eons. So the conduct of war has generally been on a very emotional, extremely emotional, sometimes completely irrational basis. And that's been the nature of warfare. Warfare is a horrible experience for people, and it attracts people who don't necessarily have the greatest intelligence in terms of how to apply their thoughts. We tend to think of generals as being brilliant, and of course, some of them are, but some of them are not. And historically, it's been a case where most generals throughout history have not been all that brilliant, and they have not done the things which I would say would be ordinary common sense.
Let's use some of these examples of Sun Tzu, and we'll apply these to historical incidences. Okay. However, we'll speak of them first in the abstraction, because these are strategies. The first, and it's most sensibly, and you just said it implicitly, Bevan, do everything you can to avoid war.
Right. The first thing you do is to go to extremes to do whatever is necessary. That is to make compromises. But historically, a lot of countries have not gone to the extremes. They've gone ahead and made war when they didn't have to, or they should not have done so. That is the first thing that you do, yes.
And you mentioned that Great Britain and America, because there's an example here of Saratoga, Great Britain had choices it could have made to incorporate the growth and the genius of America and chose to be provocative. You also say that World War I, the famous unnecessary event, a catastrophe in the 20th century, there were many opportunities for both sides to avoid the direct conflict of armies, and that also applies to Korea or other decisions. Now, the second general understanding is you do not defeat the enemy. You defeat the enemy's strategy. Have I said it correctly?
That's entirely correct, and it's a very very obtuse argument that the idea of dealing with an enemy is to find out what he wants to do, what he intends to do. And if you can figure out what he wants to do, then you can usually figure out ways to abort that program or that strategy that he has. And that's one of the great things that has often fails on the part of generals throughout history. Instead of looking at what the enemy is going to do or wants to do. They decide what they want to do, and they pay no attention to what the enemy is going to do or can do.
Let's give a quick example, the American Revolution. What was available to the British, and what did they choose not to do?
Well, that's one of the most remarkable ones in all modern history. The British Navy, the Royal Navy, was the most powerful navy on earth at the time of the American Revolution. The Navy was able to have blocked all of the ports of the American colonies, every one of them. They could have blocked them and stopped all the trade of the colonies to Europe and to through the rest of the world.
And starved trade and backed the revolutionaries into a corner in which they would have had to deal with the people who were not sympathetic to them in America.
That's correct. In other words, the people who were loyalists in America then would have come to the fore and said, let's make a compromise. And that is what the Royal Navy could have achieved. And they would, in other words, there would never have been any necessity whatsoever for any field campaigns throughout the colonies. That was a great weakness of the British Army, that they could not march all over 1,000 miles of North America and defeat the Americans, because that was just simply impossible.
But the British
took all the ports.
The British chose to use their army, which was their weakest military unit, in a frontal fashion, which was exhausting and indeterminate, because all the Americans had to do was lose. Washington lost every battle, and he won the war.
He lost every single battle except the last one. That's correct. It's entirely correct.
Now, this is the genius of Sun Tzu. You combine the orthodox maneuver with the unorthodox. There are Chinese words for this, Zing and Qi.
Yes.
And orthodox is what the enemy expects you to do. Is that correct?
Well, it's the direct approach. It's, in other words, the orthodox is the usual, the things that is normally done. Yes. The Qi is the unorthodox, the thing that is not normally done. But that is they're done in conjunction, and it can be. And it can be reversed. In other words, the usual qi can be reversed to the zing. But normally the direct approach that the one you would expect to do, in other words, if the enemy is sitting on this hill, you would expect to attack him directly on this hill, that would be zing.
Let's give an example here.
The qi would be if you go around him in some fashion.
Let's give an example from 1940. Erich von Manstein for Hitler. The Zheng, the orthodox, was to go through Belgium the way they had in the First War.
Right. Well, what the situation in Europe in 1940 was that the French had established this so-called Maginot Line, which was an impenetrable line along the French-German frontier. There was no way that the Germans could attack directly, so they had to go through Belgium. Everybody knew that. And if they went through Belgium, then the Allies, the British and the French, were already prepared to go into Belgium and to set up a line along the Dyle River just east of Brussels and stop them. And so everybody knew this was going to happen. The Germans knew it, and of course the Allies were already prepared to do it. So this was the Zing attack. And Manstein said to Hitler to go ahead and make this attack, make it look like a horrible, huge, the total effort of the German army will be directed against this location that the British and the French are going to set up for. And then, while they're completely absorbed in this, then attack through the Ardennes, which is a forested region to the south, and come across and get across the Meuse River at Sedan, which then would put the German army behind the Allied army.
And that's exactly what they did. Guderian's tanks, Panzers rolled through the Ardennes. They cut off the French and the English, and only Hitler held them back from capturing the whole of the British army.
Isn't that astonishing and amazing that the man who stopped the German army was Adolf Hitler in 1940?
So the main idea is to figure out what your enemies want you to do and then do something different or do the opposite. And that's the art of contrary thinking. Most people see the right wing, the conservatives, totally react. Their opposition, whoever they decide they are, will do something, and then the conservatives just react to that information. They don't think about it and wonder why, or think, why are our enemies using this method? Once they figure it out, then they should use other methodology to outflank these people. But they don't. That's what you mean. That's what they mean by reactionaries. They just react to somebody else's battle plan. So anyhow, and of course the secondary thing on this clip that I played for you is why Hitler stopped the troops. I think it had to do with his weird respect for the British Empire. That he was an Anglophile, as far as I'm concerned. Because he could have captured the whole armies there and brought England to the table. But he didn't. Or what was the master plan there? Was that something that had to do with the taking over of Germany by national capitalism and out of the hands of National Socialism? Well, anyhow, I'll send you along this MP3 file, the whole thing. And it's very important that you listen to it and develop a kind of thinking that's rough for your opposition to handle. Yeah. You see, that's why they put out reactionary stuff all the time, and even I fall into the trap now and then, just like I did with this black gal. I did this latest documentary, which was 2 or 3 years ago, which I never should have done. They come to this country, or they come from New York, they want to get a bunch of Klan guys and Hollywood Nazis to do what most of them do. It's reactionary, totally reactionary activity. And then they make a big documentary as a weapon to use against any kind of thinking about race. So we have nothing to gain by talking to these people. And you're going to say, well, why do you talk to them? Well, I used to think just getting the word out there would help. But you don't get enough of the word out there to help. We're better off just pursuing along the lines we're doing, where people can go to the website and download radio shows and all that kind of stuff, than to play into the hands of these bastards and when we know exactly what their plan is in the first place. You notice the author also mentioned common sense. Well, common sense is not common. That's the problem. Common sense and contrary thinking are perfect formula for winning. You see, he's talking about military battles, but this is transferred to politics, everyday politics too. It's just as important to use this rule of thumb with regular politics. When the evening news comes out with this big deal and the latest story, breaking story, well, why? Why are they doing that? Should be your first question. Who has to gain by people buying into this story? Follow the money. Where's the money going? Yeah, those are the things to ask. Now, one story I'm working on here is this local buying out of these artificial limb manufacturing companies. The Zimmer Company absorbing these other companies right here in Warsaw, Indiana, which is a multi-billion dollar operation. And evidently one of the competitors, it was one of their competitors, Medtronic, on the front page of the New York Times today. They've been hit, let me get my glasses on here so I can see what the hell I'm talking about. Health insurer Humana Incorporated is alleging that medical device maker Medtronic Incorporated violated the federal racketeering statute by conspiring with prominent physicians to promote unapproved uses of its bone growth drug, according to a lawsuit Humana filed in federal court last week. Humana alleges that Medtronic paid $210 million to prominent physicians who advocated the drug's use in certain neck and spine injuries that hadn't been approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, according to Humana's complaint. Humana alleges that the doctors advocated these uses, in part in medical journals. Medtronic then worked on to conceal its payments to the doctors, were sometimes called key opinion leaders because they can influence the types of products and procedures that other physicians use, Humana alleges. As a result, Humana alleges it paid millions of dollars for the Medtronic product sold under the brand name of Infuse that it wouldn't have otherwise. Humana's suit also alleges Medtronic committed fraud, negligent misrepresentation, and other violations of the law. In a statement, Medtronic denied the allegations and said its payments to doctors were related to the doctor's intellectual property rights. Medtronic vigorously disagrees with any suggestion that the company improperly influenced peer-reviewed published manuscripts. Eric Epperson, a company spokesman, said in an email, Medtronic does not compensate physicians for the use or endorsement of our products and disagrees with any suggestions to the contrary. Alex Kepnes, director of the corporate communications at Humana, said the company doesn't comment on pending legislation. Humana, of course, is headquartered in Louisville, Kentucky. So we got a big tornado and a teapot going here right here within a mile of my house. And I'm digging a whole lot of stuff out of New York about this latest acquisition. Zimmer's is buying up some companies. And I had a call into a senator in Washington to find out for me how much of their income, Zimmer Corporation income, is involved in simply replaceable arms, legs, hips, whatever, for military people. How much of that their profit is military associated? And, of course, that gives you a little insight. Look into the fact that this is heavily Republican here, and the Republicans almost all support these wars of occupation, of which arms and legs get blown off, and companies like Zimmer's here in Warsaw make fortunes. And these people, their CEOs and so forth, live around here in great, big, giant, wonderful homes on the lake and play the golf with all the boys. So I'm going to keep working on this, and I'm going to be sending out some letters to the local paper, of which I think they may print. What I think the end result of all this is going to be, that these big banks in New York City that have got involved with the local corporations, and I think that what's going to happen is they're going to drain these companies. And then the shareholders are going to say it's costing too much to operate here in Indiana. I think you need to move offshore. And if they move these companies offshore, this town I live next to is going to fold up like a cheap whatever. And that's what I think the end result will be. They've already, the Zimmer company has moved part of its operation to Sweden and other areas. And they're also financing schools in India and Pakistan to train Islamics to come over here and work in these plants. In other words, bouncing your families and your dads and moms out of a job. So they're working both sides of the fence. Plus, they're getting away with billions of dollars in taxes that they should be paying. Of course, the only real way of stopping this is putting tariffs on this stuff that's already outside the country coming in and level the playing field. They'd be crying pretty quick to come back to the U.S. to produce products if we apply, and your congressman who cries all the time about, oh, the wonderful working class people in this country, if they would back tariffs. But they're not. None of the Republicans are going to back tariffs, I'll guarantee you. I don't even think Rand Paul would support tariffs. If you get a chance, ask him. I was reading a little blurb that a friend sends me a whole packet of magazines every couple of months, and most of them are health magazines. She also sends me magazines about the latest guns and ammo, too. But anyhow, it said an article in here, and I'm not going to read you the whole article, but I'm going to tell you about it. Magnesium, why you need more. Most of us don't get enough of this precious mineral from the food, and a deficiency can lead to numerous health issues, from anxiety to diabetes. Here's how to use supplements. And they recommend out of regular food that you eat dark chocolate, roasted pumpkin seeds, dry roasted almonds, cooked spinach, brown rice, Swiss chard, cooked black beans, avocado, bananas, salmon, chicken breasts, roasted, lean ground beef, broccoli, apple, and raw carrot. And, of course, their importance, as you go farther down the list, they're less important. Dark chocolate gives you 1 ounce of dark chocolate gives you 95 milligrams, I believe it's MG milligrams. That's the highest. And here's something I like is roasted pumpkin seeds, 81 milligrams for 1 ounce. Dry roasted almonds, 80 milligrams for 1 ounce. But anyhow, that's some of the things that if you think you might be short on magnesium, you might want to get into. So that's the end of that discussion. Now we got one big problem in the health industry, and that is you've got the Jews in the medical end of it, to cut, surgery this, surgery that. And then you've got the multivitamin bunch, and the Jews found that was a good one to get into 2 years ago. So you're caught between a rock and a hard place. However, last year ended with a bang for the enemies of health. In December, the Annals of the Internal Medicine published a critical editorial on multivitamins, concluding that, quote, their use is not justified and they should be avoided, unquote, which is a pretty extreme statement. Further, the journal stated that the general population of supplement users have no micronutrient deficiencies. This editorial spawned many more news stories with damning headlines ranging from probing questions, are supplements a waste of money, from Fox News, to outright condemnation, quote, skip the supplements, from the New York Times. Supplement takers can breathe a sigh of relief, however. A little research shows that the negative multivitamin editorials appear to be way off base. No micronutrient deficiencies. The Annals editorial suggests multivitamins are pointless because those who take them simply do not have micronutrient deficiencies. The Centers for Disease Control appears to disagree with this position. According to the CDC's National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, 34% of Americans don't get enough vitamin A, 25% don't get enough vitamin C, 70% don't get enough vitamin D, and 60% don't get enough vitamin E. The picture for mineral consumption is no better. According to the CDC, 38% fail to get enough calcium, and 45% fail to get enough magnesium. While these figures may or may not indicate deficiency by definition, they certainly suggest suboptimal nutrient intake, falling well short of the recommended daily allowance of RDAs as set forth by the U.S. National Academy of Science and Food Nutrition Board. So there you go. Don't believe everything you hear. You can go to extremes either way. I remember my mother-in-law used to work in a hospital, a pink lady out in Santa Monica, California. And she said people actually overdose on vitamins. You can overdose on vitamins. And, of course, we know we've got millions and millions of white people addicted to over-the-counter drugs. plus the drugs that their doctors give them. So you got to be on the ball and be careful on both sides of this argument. But to totally cut out multivitamins and minerals and things like that, that's a ridiculous position. To overdo it, take too much of it, that's a ridiculous position too. You know, a lot of people know who's who after it happened, but how many know what who is going to be before it happens? Let's look into this fellow from Germany. And you mean that, and may never have heard his name. I know I haven't. Carl Theodor zu Gutenberg. In early 2011, Mr. Gutenberg served as Germany's defense minister, was the most popular politician in the nation by a wide margin. He and his glamorous, articulate wife, Stephanie, were hailed as Germany's power couple, sort of a Bill Clinton-type operation. The media within Germany and beyond viewed Gutenberg as a chancellor in reserve, unquote. A man who would inevitably replace Angela Merkel at Germany's helm. But in March 2011, Gutenberg resigned from the Bundestag and as defense minister after it was discovered he had plagiarized his doctoral thesis. The media bashed Gutenberg for months, even long after his title had been removed and he'd been exiled from politics. Although his crime was serious, the ferocity of the attack on the aristocratic superstar seemed especially intense and bizarre. Gutenberg moved his family to Connecticut, where he joined the think tank Center for Strategic and International Studies under the title Distinguished Statesman, unquote. He also became an advisor to Neelie Kroes, K-R-O-E-S, Vice President of the European Commission on the issue of Internet freedom. It's a lightweight job that doesn't seem to have consumed too much time. Many German pundits felt Carl Theodor zu Gutenberg's career as a major politician in Germany was over. But could there be another way of looking at this? Was Gutenberg's untimely departure from Germany's political scene a blessing in disguise? Gutenberg left public office just as Greece's debt crisis was peaking and at the point of forcing Germany and Europe into some divisive, deeply personal discussions. He left before unemployment in Europe became the time bomb it is today and before the financial crisis that now besieged Spain, Italy, France, and other European states really set in. He was gone before the war on Libya, before the Syrian crisis, and before the recent German election. No politician in Germany or Europe has come through all this tumult unscathed, reputation intact, political career secure and bright. There's no doubt that the plagiarism scandal hurt Gutenberg, but it's also probably saved him from being wounded, perhaps fatally, in the crossfire of the past 3 years. The plagiarism scandal is now becoming a memory, and Gutenberg has occupied his downtime brilliantly. His supreme goal likely remains to become chancellor or obtain a high-level position in Berlin or Brussels that sets him on that path. It appears that in pursuit of his goal, he has employed quite a strategy. So, anyhow, keep an eye on, don't forget this guy, Carl Theodor zu Gutenberg. We'll see what happens. Well, why does the Environmental Protection Agency need its own SWAT team? Nestled in the tranquil Connecticut River watershed of southwest New Hampshire, the city of Keene, New Hampshire, has largely avoided the violent unrest common to many other urban areas, with a population of only 23,000 people. Keene's violent crime index is about half the national average. I guess this town's about the size of Warsaw here, the town I live near. Despite the calm, however, local authorities didn't think twice about requesting a Bearcat armored counterattack vehicle from the Department of Homeland Security. Remember, those are over $600,000 vehicles, mostly brand new, that are being given out like candy. Quote, our application talked about the danger of domestic terrorism, but that's just something you put in the grant application to get the money, said Keene City Council member. See how they're maneuvering us towards this domestic terrorist thing? They're trying to make it look like it's sweeping the nation. You know what's going on, don't you? Quote, what red-blooded American cop isn't going to get excited about getting a toy like this? Unquote. Well, remember, most of the guys that are going to be running these things are pretty fresh from serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. And they're I'm sorry, boys, they were trained as killers. And they don't deprogram these people when they come back. So you got to understand that a percentage of them are going to be psychopathic killers. And at some point, they'll explode. While the possession of an armored vehicle by such a peaceful city may seem strange, the militarization of the Keene police force isn't an isolated case. Over the past decade, thousands of local police departments nationwide have been amassing stockpiles of military-grade equipment in the name of Homeland Security. And remember, Homeland Security is privatized. You thought it was run by the government. Silly you. Local police now have that sort of equipment soldiers use to fight wars. The United States Department of Defense has given out 165 mine-resistant ambush-protected vehicles under its National Military Surplus Program. Too bad we don't have Posse Comitatus anymore. Police have requested an additional 731 MRAPs. Authorities in Fargo and its surrounding county, that's North Dakota, have spent about $8 million to equip local police departments with military-style hardware, according to Andrew Becker and G.W. Schultz of the Center for Investigative Reporting. Every squad car in the city now carries a military-style machine gun. Officers have Kevlar helmets, able to withstand battlefield-grade ammunition. In Montgomery County, Texas, the Sheriff's Department now owns $300,000 of pilotless surveillance drone, like the ones used to hunt down Al-Qaeda terrorists in the Middle East, or just people in the Middle East, or even Americans in the Middle East. In Des Moines, Iowa, police bought two $180,000 bomb-disarming robots. In Arizona, at least one sheriff is now the proud owner of a surplus army tank. An Associated Press investigation of the Defense Department's military surplus program has found that over $4 billion worth of equipment has been distributed to local police forces since 1990, everything from bayonets to Humvees. This military surplus program is two decades old, but the Obama administration has expanded it. Get that? Expanded it drastically. In fiscal year 2011, the Pentagon gave away a record $500 million in military gear, which, according to the program's director, surpassed the previous mark of several hundred million. Well, you see, the taxpayers have paid for all this. And now they're going to use it in their new police state. So you're getting it both ways, dummy. Even more shocking than the $4 billion in military hardware given to local police by the Pentagon is the $34 billion in anti-terror grants given to local police by the Department of Homeland Security. This grant money, awarded with little oversight from Congress, well, the do-nothing Congress, has put advanced equipment in the hands of civilian officers and allowed local police departments to transform into small militarized forces. Why all this firepower? What sorts of events are your local police preparing for? Many people are concerned about the potential for social breakdown in the event of economic collapse, terrorist attacks, and other apocalyptic catastrophes. Will the militarization of the local police forces make us safer? Well, it depends on we're ass-kissers or not ass-kissers, or whether we grumble on our knees before the system. Is this arms buildup even legal? Well, if we had posse comitatus, I don't think it would be legal. But remember, with Homeland Security, they got rid of posse comitatus. Even if paramilitary police force can protect us from out-of-control criminals, is there another danger to the American people? Out-of-control government? Many police chiefs and sheriffs reject the idea that local police forces are becoming overly militaristic. They point to the 1997 Los Angeles bank robbers, oh my God, they always do, who pinned down police for hours with assault weapons, or to pistol-wielding students who perpetrated the 2007 Virginia Tech massacre. Well, let me clue you in, cops. That Virginia Tech thing could have been pulled off before you even got your goddamn machine started. You realize how fast you can kill people with a gun and a few clips of ammo? Well, you just don't have the time to respond to that. Well, you'll get there and then you shoot them, but the person has already done the damage. They argue that their upgrade in firepower is a necessary measure to combat such criminals. Quote, I don't see us as militarized police. I see us as keeping abreast with society, unquote, said former Los Angeles Police Chief William Bratton. And we are a gun-crazy society. I think a lot of cops are more gun-happy than the average citizen. In the 5 years since Barack Obama was first elected president, an estimated 72 million background checks for firearm purchases have been completed, representing only a fraction of the firearms purchased in the United States. Well, I think we should have double that amount. Well, let's see what else is in this article that's interesting. The SWAT mentality. The American Civil Liberties Union has criticized this increased militarization of the police forces. It is concerned that military equipment and a battlefield mentality will encourage law enforcement officers to view themselves as soldiers fighting an enemy rather than peacekeeping, protecting citizens' constitutional rights. Well, also, like I say before, you're dealing with people coming back from a battle zone that have been trained to kill. And they've been killing all over the Middle East. They've been kicking doors in. They've been bombing people and killing whole families and all that kind of stuff. And then they're coming back here and you're putting them in a police department with all this military gear. That's a recipe for tragedy. The book The Rise of the Warrior Cop records how law enforcement agencies across the nation at every level of government have been blurring the line between a police officer and soldier since the 60s. Author Radley Balko outlines the martial rhetoric and the availability of military-style equipment and what it's produced. As described in the Wall Street Journal, the warrior cop is armed to the teeth, ready to deal harshly with targeted wrongdoers and growing threat to familiar American liberties. Well, how much psychological testing are they doing for these new cops? Because any one of these cops could climb into one of those big vehicles and full of ammo and everything else and could run amok and kill far more people than any one person with a handgun or even a rifle. One major phenomenon highlighting this trend is the proliferation of SWAT units, according to the journal. The number of raids conducted by SWAT-like police units has grown in step with the police militarization efforts. From 3,000 raids nationwide in 1980 to an estimated figure of 80,000 raids in 2011. Well, I can attest for that because they came in here with a SWAT team. You know, like I said, they had, I think there were 8 or 9 of them all in their ninja suits. All their faces were masks. You couldn't see who they were. They all had machine guns. Yeah. And just waiting for one false move, and you know what would have happened. Well, that's it for today. And this is the fourth, isn't it? Yeah, this is the fourth of June. There we go. I got it out, 2014. I'll be back with you tomorrow with more good news. How about that? 14.5. Just shut up. You can't hurt yourself by not talking, but you sure as hell can sink yourself by talking. I may read a little more about this militarization of the police tomorrow. We'll see.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds when we're together?
Just sing a song and drink the sunny weather.
Happy trails to you till we meet again.
Did you ever think about this? Do you ever think about how much information in the form of radio energy there is flying through the air all around us, all over the world, right now and all the time? AM, FM, UHF, VHF, shortwave, television, CB, walkie-talkie, cell phones, cordless phones, telephone satellites, microwave relays, faxes, pagers, taxi calls, police, sheriff, hospitals, fire departments, telemetry, navigation, radar, the military, government, financial, legal, medical, the media, etc., etc., etc. Trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions of separate little bits of electronic information flying all around the world through the air at all times. Think of that. Think of how busy the air is. Then realize this. 100 years ago, there was none. None. Silence. Here are things I'm tired of. I'm getting tired of guys who smoke pipes. When are they going to outlaw this shit? Guy with a fucking pipe. It's an arrogant thing to place a burning barrier between you and the rest of the world. It's supposed to imply thoughtfulness or intelligence. It's not intelligent to stand around with a controlled fire sticking out of your mouth. I say, hey, professor, you want something hot to suck on? Call me. I'll give you something to put in your mouth. I think these pipe smokers ought to just move to the next level and go ahead and suck a dick. Nothing wrong with sucking dicks. Men do it. Women do it. Can't be all bad if everybody's doing it. I say drop the pipe and go to the dick. That's my advice. I'm here to help. I'm also getting sick of car alarms. Not the screeching and beeping. That doesn't bother me. It's just the idea of a car alarm that I find offensive. Especially the ones that talk to you. Move away. Move away. Oh, really? That's when I reach for my sharpest key, and I put a deep gouge in the paint job all the way around the car, 360 degrees. I might even make 2 trips around if I don't have a luncheon appointment that day. And then I walk away slowly, unconcerned about the screeching and beeping, because I know that no one takes car alarms seriously. Car alarms are a yuppie boomer conceit and they're responsible for most of the carjacking that's going on. Car alarms and the club have made it harder for thieves to steal parked cars, and so instead, they're stealing cars with people in them, and people are dying, and it's all because these selfish boomer degenerates can't stand to part with their personal property. Fuck boomers, and fuck their pussified car alarms. I'm also sick of having to look at bearded guys who don't know how to trim the lower edges of their beards, where they extend back toward the neck. They trim too far up toward the chin. Leaves a glaring, fleshy strip where there ought to be hair. Guys, you need to let the beard extend far enough back under your chin so it reaches the point where your neck begins. Then, from the fold or angle that forms between your jaw and neck, you shave downward. If you don't have that fold, if you have a fat, fleshy pouch under your jaw with no definition, you shouldn't be trimming your beard at all. You should let it grow long and bushy so that it covers that goofy-looking pouch. And I've just about had it with all these geeky fucks who walk around listening to Walkmans. What are these jack-offs telling us, anyway? They're too good to participate in daily life. They're sealing themselves off. Big fucking loss. And what is it they're listening to that's so compelling? I think a person has to be fairly uncomfortable with his own thoughts to have the need to block them out while simply walking around. I'd love to know how many of these obviously disturbed people become suicides. I've also grown weary reading about clouds in a book. Doesn't this piss you off? You're reading a nice story, and suddenly the writer has to stop and describe the clouds. Who cares? I'll bet you anything. I can write a decent novel with a good, entertaining story and never once mention clouds. Really. Every book you read, if there's an outdoor scene, an open window, or even a door slightly ajar, the writer has to say, as Bo and Velma walked along the shore, the clouds hung ponderously on the horizon like steel-gray, loosely formed gorilla turds. Not interested. Skip the clouds and get to the fucking. The only story I know of where clouds were important was Noah's Ark. Here's something else. I don't appreciate being put on hold and being forced to listen to someone else's radio. I don't even listen to my own radio. Why should I have to pay money to call some company and listen to theirs? And it's always the same shit, soft rock. That sucky, non-threatening, easy-listening pussy music. Soft rock is an oxymoron. Furthermore, it's not rock. And it's not even music. It's just soft. One more item. I'm tired of being unable to buy clothing that doesn't have writing and printing all over it. Insipid sayings, pseudo-wisdom, cute slogans, team logos, designer names, brand trademarks, small business ego trips. The marketing pigs and advertising swine have turned us all into walking billboards. You see some asshole walking by and he's got on a fruity Dodger hat and a Hard Rock Cafe t-shirt. Of course, you can't see the shirt if he's wearing his hot shit Chicago Bulls jacket, the one that only 50 million other loser jock sniffers own. And since this cretinous sports fan slash consumer zombie is completely for sale to anyone, he rounds out his ensemble with FedEx sneakers, Value Jet socks, Wall Street Journal sweatpants, a Starbucks jockstrap, and a Microsoft condom with Bill Gates' head on the end of it. No one in this country owns his personal appearance anymore. America has become a nation of obedient consumers actively participating in their own degradation.